Chapter 5. Hester at Her Needle. Hester Prynne's term of confinement was now at an end. The prison door was thrown open, and she came forth into the sunshine, which, falling on all alike, seemed to her sick and morbid heart as if meant for no other purpose than to reveal the scarlet letter on her breast. Perhaps there was more real torture in her first unattended footsteps from the threshold of the prison than even in the procession and spectacle that have been described, where she was made the common infamy at which all mankind was summoned to point its finger. Then she was supported by an unnatural tension of the nerves, and by all the combative energy of her character which enabled her to convert the scene into a kind of lurid triumph. It was, moreover, a separate and insulated event, to occur but once in her lifetime, and to meet which, therefore, reckless of economy, she might call up the vital strength that would have sufficed for many quiet years. The very law that condemned her, a giant of stern features, but with vigor to support as well as to annihilate in his iron arm, had held her up, though the terrible ordeal of her ignominy. But now, with this unattended walk from her prison door, began the daily custom, and she must either sustain and carry it forward by the ordinary resources of her nature, or sink beneath it. She could no longer borrow from the future to help her through the present grief. Tomorrow would bring its own trial with it. So would the next day. So would the next. Each its own trial, and yet the very same that was now so utterly grievous to be borne. The days of the far-off future would toil onward, still with the same burden for her to take up and bear along with her, but never to fling down, for the accumulating days and added years would pile up their misery upon the heap of shame. Throughout them all, giving up her individuality, she would become the general symbol at which the preacher and moralist might point, and in which they might vivify and embody their images of woman's frailty and sinful passion. Thus the young and pure would be taught to look at her with the scarlet letter flaming on her breast, at her, the child of honorable parents, at her, the mother of a babe who would hereafter be a woman, at her who had once been innocent, as the figure, the body, the reality of sin. And over her grave, the infamy that she must carry thither would be her only monument. It may seem marvelous that, with the world before her, kept by no restrictive clause of her condemnation within the limits of the Puritan settlement, so remote and so obscure, free to return to her birthplace or to any other European land, and there to hide her character and identity under a new exterior, as completely as if emerging into another state of being, and all, having also the passes of the dark, inscrutable forest open to her, where the wildness of her nature might assimilate itself with the people whose customs and life were alien from the law that had condemned her. It may seem marvelous that this woman should still call that place her home, where, and where only, she must needs be that type of shame. But there is a fatality, a feeling so irresistible and inevitable that it is the force of doom, which almost invariably compels human beings to linger around and haunt, ghost-like, the spot where some great and marked event has given the color to their lifetime, and still the more irresistibly, the darker the tinge that saddens it. Her sin, her ignominy, were the roots which she had struck into the soil. It was as if a new birth, with stronger assimilations than the first, had converted the forest land, still so uncongenial to every other pilgrim and wanderer, into Hester Prynne's wild and dreary but lifelong home. All other scenes of earth, even that village of rural England, where happy infancy and stainless maidenhood seemed yet to be in her mother's keeping, like garments put off long ago, were foreign to her in comparison. The chain that bound her here was of iron links, and galling to her innermost soul, but could never be broken. It might be, too, doubtless it was so, although she hid the secret from herself, and grew pale whenever it struggled out of her heart like a serpent from its hole. It might be that another feeling kept her within the scene and pathway that had once been so fatal. There dwelt, there trode the feet of one with whom she deemed herself connected in a union that, unrecognized on earth, would bring them together before the bar of final judgment, and make their marriage altar for a joint purity of endless retribution. Over and over again, the temper of souls had thrust this idea into Hester's contemplation, and laughed at the passionate and desperate joy with which she barely looked and hastened to bar it in his dungeon. When she compelled herself to believe what, finally, she reasoned continued, self-delusion. Here, she said to her guilt, and here should be the scene of her purge soul, and work out another purity than that which she had lost, more saint-like, because of the result of the martyrdom. Hester Prynne, therefore, did not flee. On the outskirts of the town, within the verge of the peninsula, but not in close vicinity to any other habitation, there was a small thatched cottage. While its comparative remoteness put it out of the sphere Back it all rushed again with a still deeper throb of pain, for in that brief interview she had sinned anew. Had Hester sinned alone? Her imagination was somewhat affected, and had she been of a softer moral and intellectual fiber, would have been still more so by the strange and solitary anguish of her life, walking to and fro with those lonely footsteps in the little world in which she was outwardly connected, now and then appeared to Hester, if altogether fancy, it was nevertheless too potent to be resisted. She felt or fancied then that the scarlet letter had endowed her with a new sense. Excuse me. She shuddered to believe, yet could not help believing, that it gave her a sympathetic knowledge of the hidden sin in other hearts. She was terror-stricken by the revelations that were thus made. What were they? Could they be other than in the insidious whispers of the bad angels, who would fain have persuaded the struggling woman, yet only half his victim, that the outward guise of purity was but a lie, and that if truth were everywhere to be shown, a scarlet letter would blaze forth on many a bosom besides Hester Prynne's? Or must she receive these intimations, so obscure yet so distinct, as truth? In her miserable experience, there was nothing else so awful and so loathsome as this sense. So she walks around, she somehow knows when other people have sinned, especially in the way that she has sinned, and it's freaking her out. It perplexed as well as shocked her by the irreverent inopportuneness of the occasions that brought it into vivid action. Sometimes the red infamy upon her breast would give a sympathetic throb, so the inanimate scarlet letter on her chest is like acting as her heart. As she passed near a venerable minister or magistrate, the model of piety and justice, to whom that age of antique reverence looked upon as a mortal man in fellowship with angels. What evil thing is at hand, would Hester say to herself. Lifting her reluctant eyes, there would be nothing human within the scope of view, save the form of this earthly saint. Again, a mystic sisterhood would assert itself as she met the sanctified frown of some matron, who, in according to the rumor of all tongues, had kept cold snow within her bosom throughout life. That unsunned snow in the matron's bosom, and the burning shame on Hester's, what had the two in common? Or once more the electric thrill would give her warning, behold, Hester, here is a companion. And looking up, she would detect the eyes of a young maiden, glancing at the scarlet letter, shyly on the side, and quickly averted with a faint, chill crimson in her cheeks, as if her purity were somewhat sullied by that momentary glance. O fiend, O devil, whose talisman was that fatal symbol, would you leave nothing, whether in youth or age, for this poor sinner to revere? Such loss of faith as is ever one of the saddest results of sin. Be it accepted as a proof that all was not corrupt in this poor victim of her own frailty and man's hard law, that Hester Prynne struggled to believe that no fellow mortal was guilty like herself. She didn't believe that anybody else was as sinful as she. The vulgar, who in these dreary old times were always contributing to a grotesque horror to what interested their imaginations, had a story about the Scarlet Letter, which we might readily work into a terrific legend. They averred that the symbol was not mere scarlet cloth, tinged in an earthly dye-pot, but was red-hot, with internal fire, and could be seen glowing all alight whenever Hester Prynne walked abroad in the night-time. So she's walking alone in the dark, and the scarlet letter glows like it's a flashlight. And we must needs say it seared Hester's bosom so deeply that perhaps there was more truth in the rumor than our modern incredulity may be inclined to admit.